I'm Jesse LeBlanc.
I'm Kat Miller. And this is Vines and Wines. We created this podcast to share our favorite activity of discussing financial regulation while drinking wine.
Each episode, we dive into the lessons learned from a recent disciplinary action. So grab a glass and let's dive in. Just a couple of quick disclaimers. Nothing we say here should be construed as legal advice. We're not lawyers. However, we do have collectively more than 30 years of experience in the industry, and while our opinions are our own, let us know if anything here resonates with you. We'd love to help you out.
Lastly, we dive into cases to discuss the lessons learned and best practices. Nothing we say should be taken as being critical of the firm that is at the center of this case.
So it's been a little while. We haven't been in podcast mode for the past couple of months, but here we are. It's getting to be the end of 2023, and we thought we would take an opportunity to do kind of a special type of episode for everybody. But before we dive in, you know, I think we'll just start with the usual fare and talk a little bit about what we're drinking. So, Kat, what you got?
Today is Prosecco Day. I think we both felt like an end of the year celebration deserved bubbles.
Agreed. I don't have Prosecco. I don't actually know what it is. It was $7 and I think it's Brut. So yeah, we'll just go with that. I like a Brut too. This one's mediocre at best, which again is why I brought my snack of string cheese along with me just in case I need something to cut it with. So we'll give it a shot, but it's celebratory.
I'm drinking today out of a champagne flute, which I have at my house, but I recently had the opportunity to drink out of a coupe. I think that's how you say it.
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, I've never felt so fancy in my entire life. Seriously, that is like the only way I want to drink bubbles from now on. I've got to go buy some new glasses. They're kind of like, think Great Gatsby glasses.
Okay, that does sound classy. Classier than what I normally would go with. It's a 15-year-old wine glass, I think designed for red wine, but I just am going with it today.
All right, well, let's go ahead and get into this episode.
Perfect. So if you follow us on LinkedIn, you may be aware that we typically do a weekly enforcement action review. For the rest of 2023, we're going to take this a step further and take the opportunity to do an enforcement action year in review. So as a part of this effort, Kat and I went through all of the FINRA enforcement actions in 2023 and identified the trends and themes highlighted by those cases. And in today's podcast, we're going to talk through our observations. That includes summarizing the themes in each of the observed trends, but we're also going to do a deeper dive on two topics that we felt deserved a little bit more focus from us in 2023. So if you like what you hear today, make sure to check us out on LinkedIn. And if you want some additional best practices and insights on these topics, subscribe to our newsletter. We'll be doing deeper dives into each of these themes in our weekly newsletter write-up. Well, with that, I'll turn it over to Kat to dive into our first topic.
All right. Topic number one was client-facing documents. This includes trade confirmations and account statements. There were several AWCs due to inaccuracies in trade confirmations and account statements. These inaccuracies accumulated a total fine of approximately $2.2 million. A common theme in these enforcements was security master issues, such as not identifying call features on certain security types. We also saw system or coding issues as another common theme. Those issues included capturing inaccurate capacities, average price trades, identifying incorrect market maker status, and presenting incorrect estimated yields, annual income, and investment return. Kind of following in line with that was also a common theme of record keeping issues. Two that we wanted to call out were in regards to inaccurate record keeping in the order memorandum. These fines totaled just over $1 million. In both of these cases, the firm did not make the needed updates on its proprietary order management system to capture the correct capacity. These transactions violated FINRA Rule 4511 and Exchange Act 17A. As the order memorandum indicated the incorrect capacity on the trades. This issue also caused the firms to report inaccurate capacity to the trade reporting facilities. Rule 4511 can often also be seen in other AWCs, as many inaccuracies can lead to record-keeping issues.
So another common theme was disciplinary actions related to rules 605, 606, and various other facets of Reg NMS, including issues related to intermarket sweep orders. Collectively, when it comes to the Reg NMS cases, firms were fined over $1 million in 2023 for infractions of these rules. So some of the common themes seen in these cases were firms not properly disclosing material aspects, including failing to identify accurately net aggregate amounts of payment for order flow and rebates, and not including all venues. Firms were also fined for failing to update inaccurate 606 reports that are publicly posted. There were also issues with coding errors, causing firms to have issues with categorizing orders correctly. Firms also were challenged with supervisory issues, including reviews with sample sizes that FINRA deemed to be unreasonably small, manual in nature, and not designed to identify red flags. And lastly, firms had issues with intermarket sweep issues, specifically related to trading through of protected orders. Another common trend that we saw were issues related to trace trade reporting. Firms were fined collectively more than $1.5 million in 2023 for issues related to trace trade reporting. So among the trends that were identified, firms were fined for issues related to the no remuneration indicator. That was a huge focus this year. Firms were fined for issues related to incorrectly applying the indicator, omitting the indicator when it was required, not supervising the application of the indicator, and coding errors resulting in inaccurate application of the indicator. Speaking of indicators, that's the word of the day. Firms were also found to have issues with the non-member affiliate principal transaction indicator being applied inaccurately, again, due to coding issues. There were also issues at firms for late trade reporting resulting from manual omissions or amendments to trades. Firms also had issues with failing to timely notify FINRA of new issue offerings. Firms were also having issues with inaccurate times of execution, again, resulting from coding errors that resulted in inaccurate times, or failing to report trades to the finest increments as required. Firms were also found to have issues with inadequate supervision, focusing only on rejected and mismatched trades to surveil, or failing to conduct reviews on the accuracy of reported trades.
That was definitely a lot on trace this year.
I know. It was. I feel like that's the one we've talked to firms the most about. It seems like that's been such a common topic that people want to chat about at roundtables and other events.
I agree. All right. The next theme that we pulled out from 2023 is large option position reporting, also known as LOPER. This was a hot topic this year. There was a total of approximately $6.6 million in fines for LOPER issues. All of these enforcements were due to issues with the reporting systems, such as the system failed to recognize the accounts of certain customers were under common control, coding issues that impacted aggregation logic, suppression code logic, trade date logic, quantity issues, or information regarding certain high net worth clients, and finally, system issues misreporting short positions as covered. And throughout this whole podcast, I think you're going to hear the common theme we're constantly seeing is coding issues, something to definitely keep in mind when you're reviewing your policies and procedures, doing your testing, and trying to stay out of the regulator's line of sight.
So another common theme was private placements. Firms were collectively fined more than $600,000 in fines over the year or over the course of 2023 for issues related to private placements. Some of the common themes we saw were firms that were failing to qualify investors as qualified institutional buyers or institutional investors and document the steps taken by those firms to qualify investors accordingly. There were a few firms that had issues with soliciting private placement investments without having a pre-existing relationship with those individuals. Firms had issues with amending a private placement offering without terminating and returning the investor funds. Firms also had issues with failing to timely file documents with FINRA. And lastly, firms had issues with failing to reconfirm customers' decisions to continue their investments when the minimum contingencies had not been met.
I think also interesting about private placements is that we saw it come up often in different SEC commissioner speeches.
Yeah, that's true. There was a lot of emphasis from the SEC side on that piece. And I think part of that just has to do with their continued focus on protecting investors.
All right. Next theme topic we saw was Reg Sho, which is the short sell rule. Reg Sho was new to the FINRA exam priorities for 2023. We saw several Reg Sho enforcements this year, totaling approximately $3.6 million in fines. The issues identified resulted from either a misunderstanding of the rule or, you'll never guess, coding issues. A couple examples of misunderstanding of the rules include the requirements to aggregating accounts into independent trading units and not obtaining locates due to misunderstanding trading on a net basis. Coding and system issues included code line missing to copy the long or short mark from a parent order to the child order, not preventing orders to be routed that were not included on an easy to borrow list, overreporting short interest positions due to system issues with same day trades, and failing to complete periodic reviews on systems.
So the topic we like to talk about the most here is best execution, which also happens to be a theme in enforcements. Firms were fined more than $550,000 in fines this year. So the couple of issues that were noted in these cases were failing to address and adequately supervise conflicted transactions in municipal securities from a best execution perspective, and relying solely on the 606 reports supplied by the clearing firm, and failing to subsequently conduct a regular and rigorous review of execution quality.
There are a handful of additional enforcement topics from 2023 that we wanted to share that related to capital markets. These topics are all just good reminders for firms. First, new issue market orders. In one enforcement, the firm accepted market orders for the secondary market of a new issue prior to the commencement of trading. This violated Rule 5131D4. Next topic was mark-to-market. In this case, the firm failed to supervise traders' bond marks. The inaccurate bond marks caused the firm to maintain inaccurate books and records and file inaccurate focus reports. Then we actually saw a consolidated audit trail enforcement this year. This CAT fine added up to $3.8 million. In this case, the firm failed to timely and accurately report data to CAT due to the firm failing to maintain adequate technical specifications for its order data that would have allowed the firm's data to be converted into a CAT-readable format. Moreover, the firm's technical specifications were not widely understood by certain individuals at the firm, which significantly hindered the reporting agent's ability to convert the data into a format that could be used for CAT reporting. Final case we want to bring up to you, theme was oversubscribing to partial tenders. This violated Rule 14E4, known as the short tender rule. The violation was due to over-tendering the shares because the firm calculated the number of shares available to tender on an account-by-account basis instead of a firm-wide basis as the rule requires. The firm's procedures did not take into account whether the firm had any short positions in the security in other accounts. In addition, the firm also over-tendered because it didn't account for relevant short call positions.
All right, so maybe we take a step back here because, my God, that was a lot. And if we haven't put the fear of God in everybody, like, we might all be at that spot right now where we all need to just take a drink and take a deep breath before we move on.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right. Well, we've had prior podcasts for many of these topics that we just reviewed. The last two topics, as we indicated, do not have as much coverage from Trade Lines. We're going to get a bit more detailed in these two topics.
So the first of these topics that we wanted to discuss was manipulative trading, which, if you remember, was a 2023 FINRA exam priority. There were a lot of themes identified in the cases. In fact, firms were fined collectively more than $4 million in fines for issues related to manipulative trading in 2023. But many of the themes covered in these enforcement actions were covered in the FINRA exam priorities. Things like inadequate WSPs, nonspecific surveillance thresholds, and surveillance deficiencies were common trends in all of these cases. I will it.
For the listeners, my dog is now joining the podcast. Everybody, yeah, meet
him. It's okay. We like him. We like having him in here. It's great.
For today's podcast, we're looking at six different enforcements that all had to do with manipulative trading. Several of the enforcements, the firm did not reasonably surveil for potential manipulation, such as marking the open or close, pre-range trading, and wash sells. And in addition, the firm's review of surveillance alerts were unreasonable. Now, one thing I want to call out is the review of surveillance alerts being unreasonable. In these cases, it was quoted several times, and this was due to either a limited staff or other resources needed to sufficiently review and resolve alerts for potential manipulative trading. And in those cases, what they were seeing is either people responsible for the reviews were not completing them at all, or were completing them on a major delayed basis. And again, a lot of times that was due to staffing issues. Also, a major thing that we were seeing is that the WSP did not indicate how the alerts were supposed to be reviewed and documented.
Yeah, I think that's a really pertinent theme that we identified in a lot of cases this year, that the specificity of how a person is supposed to conduct a review really needs to be stated, not only in your policies and procedures, but then also to make sure that the people who are performing those reviews really understand the steps that they need to take to surveil for this type of activity. You know, one of the things that I think was also a theme, spoofing and layering, which, let's be honest, are two of the most fun words in our language, were really, really common themes. And it's clear in some of these cases that the supervisors who were responsible for conducting those sorts of reviews may just not have really known what they were looking for. I think in some markets, it's easier to identify surveillance thresholds and patterns that you can use to surveil for activities like that. But things like fixed income transactions, for instance, it may just be harder to identify what those surveillance thresholds are supposed to be.
Another thing we saw in these cases is manipulative trading also equals AML issues.
That's right. I think there's been a large focus from not only FINRA, but the SEC to kind of loop those two things in together. So if firms aren't really looking at that type of surveillance with both lenses, you might want to kind of take a step back and figure out if you're looking at the activity in an appropriate way to be able to prevent and detect AML issues alongside those market manipulation type of issues.
Yeah, we were seeing several of these had to do with low price security trades. And in addition, specific scenarios that we all consider market manipulation were also called out for not filing SARs when appropriate.
I think really the issue on a lot of these cases, though, comes down to training. Again, we've kind of alluded to this, but do supervisors know what to look for and how to review these types of alerts? And are you providing the appropriate guidance and, again, specificity to your policies and procedures to make sure that they are aware of what they're looking for and why? So I can't tell you how many times in my career I've had conversations with people either on the surveillance side or on the business side just about, for instance, trying to define what a proper surveillance threshold is for like a fixed income security. Things like if you're trying to set up a proper threshold for like a marking the close or a front running trade and you're thinking, well, what is the appropriate size of a bond to front run? You know, people may just not necessarily understand the depth of how those markets work.
And actually, that's a great transition talking about bonds, because another major theme in two of the cases was fixed income pre-arranged trading. On both of these cases, it had to do with cross bond trades, but each one was a little bit different. One of them, the firm's policies did not allow for cross trades due to certain circumstances of the trades. So the employee made pre-arrangements with outside broker dealers, asking them to buy the bonds with a promise that he would buy them back at a higher price and cover all transaction costs. In a different case, the firm allowed institutional customers that were under common control to cross bond trades, this sometimes increasing prices between 3 to 12 points above prevailing market price.
Yeah, and in that case, the firm's daily supervisory review of the firm's trade blotter, which I think is what a lot of firms do. You just look at the trade blotter at the end of the day. It didn't detect this activity, and there was no way for somebody to hone in on that. So again, when you're having a supervisor review those types of reports, make sure that it's clear to them and you have clear and concise directions on what it is they're supposed to be identifying and looking for to prevent that type of activity from occurring.
And not all trade blotter reviews are going to find it. First of all, trade blotter reviews are very, very cumbersome. But when people think about cross trade reviews, a lot of times you're looking at it more with a branch lens and financial advisors, and you're looking at the customer's account. That might not necessarily have caught the pre-arranged trade where they're executing trades with outside broker dealer firms. In that case, I know in the past I've created a separate report outside of the standard ProServe alerts that actually looked at inputs coming in and out also. So firms may think that they're actually monitoring for these cross trades and not realizing that there's patterns that are being missed because of the logic in the reports.
So another topic that we wanted to draw out and focus on a little bit for this session was market access. Firms were collectively fined $950,000 this year for issues related to market access. And one thing we wanted to call out is that this was actually a FINRA exam priority in 2022. Some of the things that were cited in the exam priorities letter for 2022 were issues related to insufficient controls. Another finding was reliance on vendors. Just a reminder that if you think your vendor is covering you for this, you can't do that. Your firm must have its own controls and program related to market access.
Well, just to take a step back, not everybody might understand what market access rule is. So it is rule 15C35 called risk management controls for brokers and or dealers with market access. And it's really intended to set risk management controls and supervisory procedures that are reasonably designed to systematically limit the financial exposure of a broker dealer that could arise in result of market access.
There were actually three cases that we reviewed that came out this year on this topic. And all three of them, again, read kind of the same. Each one of them had issues related to things like the order management system not being reasonably designed to prevent the entry of erroneous orders, thresholds being set too high to be reasonably designed, firms that did not have rationale to explain or support thresholds. And again, coming back to procedures, procedures that did not specify how overrides or blocks or alerts should be reviewed or documented. The third case also included a failure to conduct an annual review of the effectiveness of its market access risk management controls and procedures. Just a reminder, there is a requirement in 15C35 that you do conduct a regular review of your controls to make sure that they are continuously effective. And I think really the big theme that comes through in all of these cases is testing. I think this is Trade Alliance's favorite word, testing, friends. Like, we need to make sure that we are consistently and continuously testing the effectiveness of our supervisory controls. When it comes back to the thresholds that are used to ensure that your risk management controls are reasonably designed, really looking at those thresholds that you set to make sure that you're catching duplicative orders, that you're catching erroneous orders, and having that rationale to support and back that up. If you don't have that information captured in a sufficient way, that could get you sideways with the regulators.
Right. And that was actually something that was called out in one of the cases is, you know, you think a lot about the hard edit. A lot of people think more in terms of the hard edits are also known as hard blocks, which prevent a trade from going through altogether. But for those duplicative trades, a lot of times that's a soft warning message or what we call soft edits that the FA may just like blow right through that particular trade or, you know, whoever it might be. The case did call out that the firm failed to establish a reasonable supervisory system concerning the soft block reviews and modifications to existing controls.
That's right. I mean, I think, again, we talked just a moment ago about the specificity of procedures, but really being able to say like why it's okay to override a soft block and not just having it set up in the fact in the way that like it's just going to get overridden every time. Like those blocks, whether it's a soft block or a hard block, should be used for a reason. And if your system can't explain that, or if you don't have a documented process to explain why those soft blocks and hard blocks exist where they do, that could be a red flag for regulators. So normally we post the enforcements we review to the podcast notes. This year in review recap comprised over 40 enforcements. If you need any help finding these enforcements to personally review, email solutions@tradealliance.com and we can send them to you. In summary, FINRA enforcement encompassed a lot this year, but one central theme we'd really want to draw your attention to is this emphasis FINRA placed on having specifics in your WSPs. Regardless of the issue, many of these firms were cited for inadequately supervisory systems based on the fact that either their WSPs didn't list specific steps taken to supervise, or that the supervisors were unaware of what specific steps to take during reviews. An additional theme that we saw in many of these cases were related to coding issues and system problems that could have been solved with more proper testing exercises. As you prepare for 2024, be mindful of these issues and any other themes we discussed today. And as always, we're here to help you if you need assistance with any of the topics we covered.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Fines and Wines is a part of TradeLiance, a consulting firm for broker-dealers and investment advisors with trading, operations, and compliance. Though these episodes are intended to be casual and a fun take on discussing regulation, our consultants are serious when it comes to helping you out.